this give you renewed hope in electoral politics? I'm sure you have been very much outside of that scene.
You know, when Dr. Stein asked me to consider being a part of this, I knew that the historical conditions were ripe. I knew that we had a chance to really use the electoral process to advance people's agenda. I knew that there was going to be a tremendous support for this Green Party push. So it's about electoral process, but it's about building popular power. And when Dr. Stein said the theme of this campaign was about putting power back in the hands of the people, I said, I'm with Jill. Sign me up.
We're going to wrap up right now. I want to thank everyone for joining us. Winona LaDuke of Honor the Earth, Joy Braun of the Indigenous Environmental Network. Thanks so much for being with us from North Dakota. And I want to thank Dr. Jill Stein, as well as Ajamu Baraka, the presidential and vice presidential nominees of the Green Party. I'll be speaking in Seattle, Washington at the Sheraton Seattle Hotel on Friday night, along with Kushama Savant and Walden Bello. Check our website at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Nermeen Sheikh, Dina Guzder, Sam Alkoff, Ravi Karan, Hani Massoud, Trina Nadura, Andre Lewis. Maya Bill Noguera and Paul Huckabee are engineers. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Voices from the Edge Talk Radio with our host, Joanne Hardesty. Today, we'll talk about police accountability and the two-year-old Department of Justice rulings on Portland police.
Community Radio is celebrating National Radio Day on Saturday, August 20th. We'll be with our friends Freeform Portland, KPSU, and X-Ray at the 10th Annual Centaurpalooza at 2801 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. National Radio Day honors the excitement of radio listening and producing. KBOO stands together with other stations, independent producers, and folks who share a media equity mission on this joyful day. Again, that's National Radio Day, Saturday, August 20th, celebrated on air and at Centaurpalooza from noon to 10 p.m. at 2801 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/nrd2016.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring. We are seeking a full-time AM News and Public Affairs Director. Applications are due by 4 p.m. Friday, September 2nd, at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. Applications may also be emailed. Send them to hiring@kboo.org. To apply, please send both a resume and a cover letter outlining your skills and experience with regard to the minimum qualifications. And please answer the question, why is KBOO important? For more information and a full job description, go to kboo.fm/AM News. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. Again, that's kboo.fm/AM News. And thank you.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at In Other Words Bookstore in Portland. A panel of African women from different organizations will be highlighting the issues impacting African women across the globe, and to highlight the necessity for African women to be united and organized on a worldwide basis against imperialism. Edutainment and childcare will be provided. Again, that's Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at 5:30 p.m. at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning, good morning. I'm Joanne Hardesty, and welcome to Voices from the Edge. I'm going to give you a second to go and get your pen and paper, because I'm going to try really hard not to talk in acronyms as we discuss 2 years of something around the Portland Settlement Agreement with the Department of Justice and Portland Police Bureau. And if you've been paying even a tiny bit of attention, you may have come to the same conclusion that I have, which is oversight of police accountability has pretty much imploded in the city of Portland. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And so I will start with the system that we have in place to provide, to determine whether or not the recommendations, the mandates in the Department of Justice settlement agreement are being carried out. As you know, the city of Portland chose in its wisdom to hire a compliance officer and community liaison, normally called the COCL, C-O-C-L, from Chicago. Dennis from Chicago. And recently, he has requested to be separated, to have his responsibilities separated from the Community Oversight Advisory Board. And he has asked to do that, however, and continue his contract as if nothing else has happened. And so let me slowly kind of walk through the process for those of you who might not be as into the weeds as some of us are. And I know you listeners, many of you have been going to the Community Oversight Advisory Board meetings. Many of you have weighed in on the COCL's desire to divorce from his work with the community. And so feel free to give me a call at 503-231-8187 to join the conversation. And so I'm going to go back again. Rosenbaum and Watson, which is the firm out of Chicago that has requested from the Department of Justice in the city of Portland that they are be able to continue their contract, but absent their mandate to chair and facilitate the Community Oversight Advisory Board's work. That request has been put in, and we don't report back to Judge Simon until the end of October. And so so we're in a holding pattern as far as whether or not the Department of Justice, the city of Portland, will agree to that. Then we have the Community Oversight Advisory Board also requesting that they be separated from the Community Oversight Community Liaison, the Chicago firm, Rosenbaum and Watson, and that they be allowed to hire their own chair, elect their own chair from within their membership. And they've also requested that the courts, that a court appointed monitor be appointed to take the place of the work that the COCL is currently doing. Again, that's just a request until the City of Portland and the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division weighs in and says yes or no. Again, it is just a request. However, since the request have been placed, both are operating as if the request has been granted, which means that Rosenbaum and Watson do not see themselves as being connected to the community-based advisory board any longer, and they're just doing their data collection work and writing their reports, but don't believe that they have a role in actually engaging the broader community. And in fact, it appears that Rosenbaum and Watson blame the community for the dysfunction of the meetings that they facilitated. But I think the problem with Rosenbaum and Watson has been from the beginning that they have a different perspective of community engagement than the community in Portland does. We have a caller on the line, so we're going to go to the phone. Good morning, Jeremy. Welcome to KBOO. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
This is beyond horrible, but in some ways, I kind of feel like in Portland, or in probably most cities, asking for community oversight of the police is like going into McDonald's and asking for, you know, a gourmet veggie burger. It's not going to happen. They don't serve that here.
Yeah.
And I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of amazed that at this last little bit. Because it's so outrageous, and hopefully there'll be a large community response, which I will join. But I don't really believe the police to be reformable. You know, it goes back to Civil War days and radical Reconstruction. Mm. The cops exist to suppress dissent and protect private property and break strikes and do all sorts of other horrible stuff. And I don't see, in the absence of some sort of, you know, real change, that Ted Wheeler, you know, worth $100 million, isn't terribly interested in. Charlie Hales, who wanted to be worth $100 million, and Sam Adams, who just wanted to rule the world, and all the other commissioners. I mean, I don't see how asking or even demanding reform is anything other than you know, we'll get us anything other than the sad joke it's gotten us.
Well, Jeremy, I disagree with you. I mean, what I think
is I'm not being a little devil's advocate.
Yeah, I understand. What I agree with is that the city council, for the most part, has been totally absent. They have delegated police reform to the police bureau. When the mayor hired the police officer to be his public safety liaison to the community, Deanna Weston Mitchell, that signaled that police reform was being delegated to the police bureau. But we, the public, have a role and actually forcing the other city council members to get off of their butts and actually start paying attention to what's happening. Because, of course, the mayor's the police commissioner, but every commissioner voted to support the settlement agreement and the big dollars that we're spending for the Chicago contractor and all the millions of dollars we're spending at the police bureau to actually implement these reforms. And so the buck stops with the entire city council. And until they are actively engaged, I mean, they've all been absent. And when you go to the city council and talk about police, you find out just how disconnected they are, because they're still asking stupid questions like, what's the 48-hour rule?
Uh-huh.
And even the public knows what the 48-hour rule is. And so that's the problem. And I think we, the public, have to put much more pressure on the city, other city council members, but also hold the police commissioner accountable for their action.
So, I mean, is there any one of them that's marginally less terrible than the rest? Because I can't see calling all six of them.
Well,
that's like, you know, I can see screaming at one of them.
Right.
You know,
well,
the least bad.
Then I would say I would pick the one that wants to get reelected.
Which is Wheeler.
No, Wheeler's already elected.
He wants to be governor next time. That's
true. No, he's already elected. He is mayor-elect, and he takes office in January. But there is a city council member who I believe is called Novick.
This is true. Well, he's a disaster.
Who is in a runoff against a very, very progressive woman who actually tells it like it is. So
yeah, I'm going to vote for her. But do you think yelling at Novick's going to do any good?
Well, I think just putting it on record, right? Whether you call and yell at him, whether you email him, whether you send him a snail mail letter, I think it's important that he knows that the public has an expectation that he's going to play a role in police reform.
Yeah, I've actually been particularly disappointed in him, and I guess in Fritz, because with their, you know, presence and general stated concern around the you know, in the aftermath of the Chatsy case and the whole sort of mental health issue,
yes,
as pertains to police misconduct. And then they functionally disappeared as commissioners.
Exactly. And I share your frustration with Commissioner Fritz, because I feel like with her mental health background, she should be playing a much more active role than she has been. And
I used to work in opposition to psychiatric nurses, because I worked as an advocate getting people out. And, you know, I couldn't vote for Fritz because I had a conversation with her about why she thinks it's okay for people to be put in mental jail without proper due process. And her answer was, you know, informed, but, you know,
but
she
it didn't
believes in biological psychiatry and the police power that comes with it.
So Jeremy,
I still expected her to be a better commissioner on this issue. Anyway, thanks a lot.
We got who we voted for, right? Have a good day.
Yeah, I didn't vote for her.
Okay. Have a good
thanks
day, Jeremy. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. Before I go back to the phone line, I want to give you a date. On August 23rd, there will be a second meeting on the Citizen Review Committee, which is a subcommittee of the IPR, the Independent Police Review. See, now you know why I told you to get a paper and pen, so you can take these acronyms and make them real words. IPR, Independent Police Review. That meeting will take place at Maranatha Church at 6 p.m. And so the reason this meeting is happening is because the mayor and the auditor got together, had a focus group, a very small focus group that was heavily weighed towards law enforcement personnel and people that support that, and then came up with this proposal to change how the appeal process works when someone has filed a complaint against Portland Police. The only place in the system where the public gets to weigh in and observe police discipline is in the CRC process, which is a complaint has been filed, a decision has been made, and then the person who filed the complaint files an appeal. And that's the CRC is who hears the appeal. And so because it's been taking much longer than a 180 days that the Department of Justice mandated, investigations are completed, this proposal was rolled out to the public under a very misleading headline. And so a couple of weeks ago, the mayor had a public meeting to ask the public what's working, what's not in police oversight. But that wasn't really why he had the public meeting. The public meeting was held so that they could bring out this crazy proposal to eliminate the public opportunity in police oversight. And so you asked this question, but he came to the meeting with a proposal that already had an agenda date set at the city council, which is set for September 7th, I believe. And so that's really what he was trying to get the public to say, oh, yeah, this makes perfect sense. Well, even without telling the public what was being proposed, the public figured it out pretty quickly when they realized that they were fundamentally cutting the public out of any kind of oversight of police discipline, and which is the most ludicrous thing, because the reason that investigations are taking so long is because the paid people within the police bureau, the internal affairs division, as well as the paid people at the Independent Police Review Commission, take forever to complete an investigation. The community members who serve on the Citizen Review Committee actually they have to have their work done in 21 days as per the settlement agreement. When the settlement agreement was developed, we told the DOJ that it is ludicrous to have all this time for the paid people and then limit the volunteers to 21 days. Did they listen to us? Of course not, because the powers that be convinced them that somehow 21 days was enough for volunteers who are reviewing police misconduct cases. And so because the Department of, in anticipation of the Department of Justice putting pressure on the city council for being out of compliance with the settlement agreement, the mayor's office is proposing, along with the auditor, this new system of police accountability. Now, what this would mean is it would combine the Citizen Community Review Committee with the Police Review Board and make it a larger body that would hear more reviews and possibly deaths in custodies, but it would be totally out of the public's eye. Now, what we know is that when police investigate themselves behind closed doors, is that the public never hears about police doing anything wrong. What we know is that when police investigate police behind closed doors, they're always exonerated and nothing happens to them. And so the fact that the mayor and the city council are scheduled to vote on a proposal that cuts the public out of being able to observe, provide testimony at police accountability hearings when they are being charged with violating their code either of conduct or policy or regulations, seems to be a huge step backwards. We have been trying to get more transparency. We want the doors open wider so that we can see ourselves, that Portland Police is changing, Instead, the mayor seems to be really in the camp of the less public, the better, involved in police oversight. And so this is really outrageous. And I would hope that there is a strong community turnout on August 23rd at Maranatha Church to weigh in on this ludicrous proposal to cut the public out of actually being able to see how police are disciplined. And I got to tell you, if you've ever sit through one of those CRC meetings, you see how hard it is to actually discipline police officers and to hold them accountable for their behavior. It is the only window we have to see how hard that is. And so how do we ask for police accountability if we don't understand what the current system is? If you want to join the conversation, give us a call at 503-231-8187. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to KBOOK.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I'm okay. This whole thing, this whole investigation and everything that's been going on, you know, I have to say I have not been following it because, you know, what I see here, quote, on the ground or whatever way you want to put it, I live in the Southwest, and, you know, basically the police have just sort of taken their hands off of everything. And, you know, in my neighborhood, you know, the increase in homelessness and the increase in crime and drug activity is amazing, and the police are no longer interested in responding to any of it, and you know it's actually jeopardizing the safety of most people in the buildings around me, and you know
actually, so they're not responding to your calls.
They're just not. They're saying there's nothing we can do. For example, one of the clerks at Plaid Pantry on Jefferson and I think it's 11th said, you know, hey, they don't come out unless somebody steals $100 worth of stuff. They said, don't call them.
You know, I heard that before. And is
I think I told you that before.
Oh, okay.
The point I'm trying to make is I don't think this police force is doing anything that the rest of the police forces in the country are not doing. They're ruling by chaos. And, you know, and I think Charlie Hales is basically, you know, he's neglected everything he could in our city, you know, that mean anything to anybody. You know, the streets are just, you know, are just horrible here, you know, and the neighborhoods are becoming dangerous to live in. And the thing is like, what I hear the police saying, well, you know, you guys screwed us, so we're not going to do anything for you anymore. And it's just, you know, that's the message I'm getting down here on the ground, mm-hmm. as they say. And, you know, I really think that all these roadblocks they're putting in front of accountability and public participation are just what those are. Those are roadblocks. Mm-hmm. And I don't know where Charlie Hales, you know, incurred the title of Democrat because he's not a, you know, I mean, he's a right winger.
I don't know that he is. I don't know that he is. I don't know that he's ever been a Democrat.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, in the end, you know, I have to look at the people in Portland and, you know, and go, you know, you're in 5 years, you're going to be stuck with a dangerous city with a lot of empty buildings, because, you know, really care what anybody says. Yeah. People are not moving here to take over and pay exorbitant rents and live in this type of situation. I mean, there are literally, it looks like, you know, New Delhi, or, you know, it looks like Bangalore. It's scary. I walk to work every night, and I'm not just complaining. You know, I'm saying that in the 7 years that I've been here, mm-hmm. Joanne, this town has deteriorated.
I hear you. I mean, we actually have become a town that's much more divided than when I moved here 26 years ago. We are a town now that if you are wealthy, this is your paradise. If you are working class or poor, you are hanging on by a thread.
Well, I have a friend who's a deacon of an African-American church, mm-hmm. and the message that the police are giving the churches, his church, is that we can't do anything until we hire 200 more police officers.
See, I'm glad you brought that up because, I mean, that's the big lie. As long as I've lived here, Portland Police has complained that they didn't have enough police officers. Every single new police commissioner hears that argument. Oh, we're low. And in fact, if you picked up this week's Willamette Week, there's a story in there about how they're so short-staffed, they're going to now take officers who sit on their butt all day in these specialty units looking for either somebody selling drugs or guns or something and actually put them in patrol cars and put them in on the street. Well, they should have done that a long time ago, quite frankly. Like the gang enforcement unit, when you have to have 10 officers to stop one individual, that is a messed up unit, right? You operate like a gang so that you can go out and try to find gangs. It is the most ludicrous proposal. And when I've asked the sergeant in charge, why does it take so many of you to make a drug stop? We're safer. He says study shows that we're safer when we roll out as a team. And we always roll out as a team, and there's always 10 of us or more.
I need to say this at this point, you know, Joanne, everything I hear you describe on the radio as far as procedures and everything,
right.
You know, they're all valid, okay?
Right.
But I think people need to start learning something. And, you know, I'm 57, okay? But, you know, just people, like, freshen their mind. You know, we allowed, and this is a macro look, we allowed a president of the United States, George Bush, to stand up and lie to us and bring us into a $10 billion a month war.
Right.
And waste incredible amounts of money and go up to the VA and see the carnage that has been caused by this. And, you know, I mean, this all sounds like, oh, well, that's not my problem. But that's basically the model that has been, you know, put into Portland is our elected officials are there to lie to us and to waste completely waste all of our tax money at the point where we don't even have a road to drive down.
Right.
And we don't even, you know, when did the, you know, fire hydrants go down? You know, this is what's going on. And if people don't start taking the long view, and if we don't start, like, going up to City Hall and saying, look, you know, Mr. Hales, you either leave or you're going to be arrested, period. I mean, if George Bush and Dick Cheney had been arrested, and if they leave the country, they will be, you know, probably still. There's probably warrants out for them. You know, we would go a long way to start validating our concerns out here in the community. But as long as we keep these guys and just let them, you know, keep the circus rolling, I mean, we're going to be, you know, the next guy's going to come and do the same thing because it's a moneymaker.
Well, I mean, I think that's the bottom line. And so we need better candidates, and which means we need people that aren't filthy rich running and serving in public office. And that's one good thing that the city council is actually working on is a public finance system. And they're going to be bringing that back, I believe, sometime in September. That could be the very best thing that this city council has ever done.
And by the way, when Macy's goes out of business downtown, because they're closing 50% of their stores because they can't deal, I mean, you know, they racially profile in their stores and they, you know, they just have rip-off, you know, type of sales. What is Charlie Hales or his successor going to do? Bring a Walmart in? I mean, what is the tax base going to turn into when all these businesses start going under because they're just top-heavy? And there will be no more money from there will be no more influence from, like, places like Macy's and stuff like that. I mean, you know, you're looking at deteriorating downtown there.
Right.
So what is the reason? I mean, what are they going to do, put in another coffee shop?
You know? That's a good question. Well, thank you very much for your call. You do the same.
Okay, bye.
You know, it just occurred to me that yesterday, former Portland Police Chief Mike Reese took over the helm as Multnomah County Sheriff. And I want to encourage anybody out there who has half a chance of becoming sheriff to please apply by the 30th of this month to run for Multnomah County Sheriff. We cannot allow Mike Reese to get elected into the Multnomah County Sheriff position, in my humble opinion, because the guy is not... Multnomah County has a lot of problems in their sheriff's office, and Mike Reese is not a solution to those problems. If you look at his record as police chief in the city of Portland, you should be horrified to think that he wants to run and serve as sheriff of Multnomah County. And you may remember on April Fool's Day when he held the fundraiser for a new foundation for police, as well as for the Citizen Crime Commission. So now he is Multnomah County Sheriff. He is chair of the Citizen Crime Commission and also the president of the new police foundation that he formed. He should actually have to give up all those positions if he, in fact, is sheriff, number one. And number two, since it's only temporary until a special election, other people have an opportunity to weigh in. And I will also remind you that his entire management staff were white, middle-aged men just like him. And so if that's the model that Multnomah County voters want for an incoming sheriff, after all the other idiotic sheriffs that we've had at Multnomah County, this is a step backwards and would be worse than the other sheriffs who were sexually harassing, intimidating, and abusing their employees. And if you think you're going from Stanton to Reese and you're going to improve that standing, you are in for a rude awakening. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Mitch. Welcome to KBOO.
I think that the Reese example you give pretty much highlights what prompted me to call when I heard your previous caller discuss with you the frustrations. And I think the frustrations come from not realizing that we in the activist community are lacking important terms. Because if we don't have the language, we don't know what to ask for anymore.
Right.
The problems of homelessness that local business people complain about, the problem isn't that their local business is complaining. The problem is that they are insisting that the solutions be market-based.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problems that have been caused are market-based. You can talk about racism, but racism is the expression of people all trying to make a buck where there isn't a buck to be made, because it is government's role to treat national emergencies, and it is government's role to treat national health crises. And when you look at homelessness, the central government, if your previous caller had used the term neoliberal economic model, we could begin to understand what has gone wrong and why billions of dollars have vanished into thin air, hiring companies like Rosenbaum and Watson to come into town, displace civilian oversight, and add a corporate veneer where corporations can start billing the government for doing what the government needs to do. Now, it's very good to look at the Bush-Cheney administration, because they privatized, just like Clinton before them, had privatized intelligence and FEMA. Remember what FEMA was like when Hurricane Katrina hit.
Yes.
You take the professionals out of government agencies like FEMA, and you put in your cronies from business, who then use taxpayer money to provide big contracts that are proposed to solve problems that are national problems. So we saw with the billionaire oligarch Michael Bloomfield in New York, when homelessness could no longer be hidden in the subways of New York, what did he do? Did he set up a government agency to deal with the market-based problems? He went right back to people who use the free market. He gave billions of dollars to these slumlords to use their condemned buildings as homeless shelters. They wound up billing a fortune to the city, but the homeless problem doesn't go away. You know why? Because it's a national problem, and we need a national agency. We have had billions of our dollars, hundreds of billions of our dollars, go into wars on drugs that hasn't provided an outcome that would limit the amount of drugs coming into the country.
I'm going to have to cut in.
We don't have a war on homelessness.
Hello. You can't call a radio show and then do a monologue. This is supposed to be talk radio. So if you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. I would have loved to have had a conversation with that caller because he did have some excellent, excellent factual information. But unfortunately, he did not want to have a conversation. I want to share with you a press release that recently was sent to the Portland City Council on behalf of Portland Cop Watch, the NAACP, and other organizations who have been paying a great deal of attention to what's been taking place around police reform. And thank you to the Oregonian for actually making the community aware that our mayor is holding closed door negotiations with Portland Police Bureau to renegotiate a new contract for them. I am very concerned about behind closed doors negotiations of the police union contract, especially before the contract has expired. It would be my expectation, and I believe the expectation of most thinking people, that the contract should be negotiated by the new mayor, since the contract does not expire until 6 months after the new mayor has been in office. And so why would the mayor be doing closed-door secret negotiations with the police union? I believe it's so that he can pass a favorable contract that does not hold the Portland police to any kind of standards of accountability, and get that locked in so that we, the people, will have to wait 4 to 5 years to make any additional changes to the police union contract. That is unacceptable and should not be allowed to happen. And so we collectively sent a letter to the entire city council in regard to this contract negotiations that's taking place even as we speak. And so here is what we've asked. The proposal regarding Portland Police Association's contract. The city must push to make public all bargaining sessions with the Portland Police Association, such as were held in 2010 and again in 2013. Changes to the contract that are about public policy and not workplace safety or other mandatory bargainable issues shall not be included in the contract. This includes, but is not limited to, setting policy on body cameras. In that regard, there should be no viewing of body camera footage by officers before they write their reports. Body cameras are being promised to the community as a way to hold police accountable. Number three, changes made to the contract to improve community police relations and only relating to public policy, such as the ones outlined below, shall not be bargained in exchange for financial gain or incentive by PPA or its members. Number four, make the following changes to the contract. A, modify the binding arbitration clause so that terminations based on improper police actions that involve deadly force and or a death in custody goes instead to the Civil Service Board and the courts rather than an arbitrator. Community members' desire is to see officers who are fired stay fired and are concerned that arbitrators are not making neutral decisions. B. No-brainer, in the 48-hour rule. There's really no compelling reason that that rule is still on the books. And this police commissioner, Charlie Hales, had the opportunity to remove it the last time he negotiated the Portland police contract, because he was in the same situation that incoming mayor Ted Wheeler was in, which is he comes in and 6 months into his term, the contract is up. If Charlie Hales wanted to get rid of the 48-hour rule, he had the perfect opportunity when he took office almost 4 years ago to get rid of that 48-hour rule. And he did. He not even, not only did he not get rid of it, he didn't even talk about getting rid of it. And that was a problem. And so that should go away. Allow compelled testimony by a civilian agency investigating misconduct complaints. Currently, the Portland Police Union contract says that only officers can interview, only sworn officers can interview police officers about misconduct cases. And that's ridiculous if our goal is to have community have oversight of our policing. Allow IPR or similar agencies to have jurisdictions over deadly force cases. And last, require testing for drugs, alcohol, and steroids after deadly force, excessive force incidents based on probable cause, or due to how unusual it is for officers to apply deadly force. Deadly force is only used once in every 8,000 to 100,000 calls for service. Federal regulations require truck drivers who kill or injure people in accidents be tested for alcohol or drugs. Police officers using deadly force should fall under the same type of scrutiny. And that's it. And so those were the very specific union contract changes that we put into the press release that then went to the entire city council. So what's coming up next? What's coming up next, again, is the community meeting that will take place on the 23rd of August, and it will be from 6 to 8 p.m. at Maranatha Church, located at 4222 Northeast 12th Avenue. This is an opportunity to let the city council know, A, it seems ludicrous that if you want to change, fundamentally change, police oversight, that you would make those proposals behind closed doors and then bring it out to the public expecting a rubber stamp. And so if you believe that the public is key to holding police accountable for inappropriate behavior, then I would encourage you, if you cannot make the meeting on the 23rd, that you write the entire city council and let them know of your views on this topic. It is really, really important that they hear from the public, because otherwise the assumption will be that the public has gone along with this ludicrous proposal. If you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. I'm really feeling for the community members that are part of the Community Oversight Advisory Board. These are community members who have put in anywhere between 20 and 40 hours of volunteer time a week, reading material, attending meetings, seeking input. And again, these are community members who are not paid a dime to participate in this effort. And one of the things that we've been advocating for quite some time is that those community members should be receiving a stipend that actually helps them be able to put so many hours into police oversight. And I want to go back to the whole COCL/COAB divorce request. The settlement agreement is really, really clear that what the structure is supposed to be and who is responsible for that structure. And I don't see, and the fact that right now there are only eight voting members on the Community Oversight Advisory Board because of resignations, not all related to the recent chaos, some related to run for public office, job changes, et cetera. But what's interesting is that there are five voting seats that are open on the COAB, and all five of those seats are government seats. So city council appointments or the Human Rights Commission's appointments from either the Community Police Relations Committee or from the Disability Rights Commission. So the five empty seats on empty because the community hasn't stepped up and replaced community members who've dropped off. They are empty because the city council has not taken action immediately to replace people that they've appointed who have dropped off of these committees. And so the COCL in the city of Portland seem to be blaming the community for their lack of forward motion. But if you've been paying attention, you know that it is really the city council who has fell down on the job of police accountability and police oversight. It is also the city council that's fell down on the job of replacing community oversight advisory board members who have resigned from the commission. It is also the city council that has fell down on the job of actually being totally engaged in observing and having input on what reform of Portland police should look like, and they should be weighing in. They are on the line because they voted for this measure, and therefore they have a responsibility. And so if you look at all the and the thing I didn't mention, that in 2 years, we've had three police chiefs. And so when you talk about reforming a military culture, and then you have to keep changing leaders in the game, that becomes a serious problem because everything is about who's in charge, who's setting the vision, who's making sure that oversight is taking place. And so O'Day, I really liked working with O'Day. I believe that he was committed to the reforms that were taking place. Mike Reese, I hated working with him because he wasn't committed to reform. He was merely committed to articulating reform, but he wasn't actually committed to making reform happen. And now we have a new police chief, Mike Marshman, and the vote's still out. He hasn't been police chief long enough for me to know whether or not he's truly committed to this reform effort. And so when the leadership keeps changing, and you already know that the officers in the rank don't think there's anything wrong, that's a problem. And so we as the community have to stop putting pressure on the Portland City Council, all of them, to actually make sure that they are weighing in and following this reform effort. I would say leading it, but our city council seems to be more followers. So follow it. If you can't lead, follow. I'm going to go back to the phone line. Good morning, James. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I think you're absolutely right. I have a lot of friends on Facebook in other cities, and they started this thing. It's the New Era movement.
Right.
They have New Era Chicago, New Era Cleveland, a lot of the places where there's a lot. Mainly it's in the places where there's a lot of black folks, which is really cool because, you know, they're starting to, they're doing double duty. They're not only working with, I mean, some of them, I guess, the ones that I've seen are working with the local police department,
right.
But they're also doing double duty in holding the community accountable as well,
you
know, when the street codes are broken. And I just, I guess I just don't see why it's so. Maybe I can see it to an extent because, you know, there's a lot of power given to the police, but
yes.
I don't see how, you know, it's like you said, if they were really concerned with, you know, making sure the community was holding them accountable, they would make these negotiations public.
Yes.
And I'm just frustrated because it's, you know, because like you said, there's been so much progress made with communities of color in Portland, between communities of color and the police, and now you want to put Mike Reese back in charge of Multnomah County when he was the one behind those billboards that were slandering homeless people,
yes.
And telling everybody that there wasn't enough cops,
right?
And in reality, it's like we have enough cops, but number one, they're overworked, and number two, they're not compensated well enough for the time that they put in. Because I was looking at, like, the UK, while it's not the greatest of, you know, the greatest look at, you know, police departments, but they work on average, UK police work on average 33 to 40 hours a week and get paid $70,000 a year in our dollars, whereas, like, police here in Portland, or at least in the United States anyway, work an average of 84 hours a week and only get paid $50,000.
If they're working an average of 84 hours a week, it's because they're getting massive overtime. right?
Yeah.
I don't. They're not required to work any more than 40 hours a week. So I don't think that's a problem with Portland police, is that they are overworked and underpaid. I don't think that's their problem at all. I think that they are they see themselves as an occupying force, that their job is to come in and mandate people react and behave in a certain way. But that's only in certain communities, because they don't have that approach when they're up in the Northwest Hills. They have very specific communities that they have that approach in. And so what I know about Portland police is that there are some police officers that see it as their right to work overtime to the extent that they double their take-home salary because they're working so much overtime. For me, I think that they are more frightening than anybody else on the street with a gun, because if you're working 80 hours a week, you are not at your best. You are not.
No.
You are not thinking well. You are not. You don't have quick response. I don't want that person answering a call if they've already put in 80 hours that week. I don't want them coming to my house.
Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Right. So yeah. I agree with you that what we do, that I think what we need to do is rethink policing. We have this philosophy of policing that they're supposed to be big, bad butt people that come out and just like mandate appropriate behavior, right? We got to rethink policing, because there will never be enough police officers to match one for one the population of the people being policed. So the only way to be policed is in cooperation, right?
Yes.
So
no doubt.
We've got to develop a collaborative relationship with policing that works for us, not what the certified smart people say is, you know, best practices in policing, but what we, the community, decide is how we want to be policed.
Well, yeah, because every community is different. You can't just mandate one. You can't just make a broad sweeping rule. I think, well, that's important too, because if, you know, I make this comparison a lot, but if you look at how, you know, once people who were just developmentally physically disabled people, when they were essentially policed by their care providers to the point where it was causing mental and physical distress.
That's right.
Because they were constantly in their space all the time. But once we started giving them a voice, being able to speak for themselves and being able to work collaboratively with their care providers and their caseworkers, you know, that's when we were starting to able to make change. And I would like to see, I agree, we definitely need to change policing to in a way that allows us and the communities to be able to work together.
Absolutely. So. Thank you so much for your call. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you. 503-231-8187. Roger. Hello, Roger. Good morning. Welcome to KBOO. Are you the Roger?
Bud?
Hey, Roger?
Yes. Yes, I'm Roger Widener is my name.
Hi, Roger.
I'm a former attorney and public prosecutor. 40 years ago, I was the governor. I ran the Consumer Fraud Department in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I was the 1998 Oregon Reform Party candidate for governor. I've been going after the corruption that's going on in the system. And what you're talking about, I've experienced it firsthand. I've been repeatedly arrested, many times violently, for trying to speak in these courtrooms about innocent people in this community having their children, their property, their freedom stripped of them in these sham judicial proceedings. And the police laying in wait, I've been attacked in the courtroom trying to speak like I'm speaking now as a former prosecutor about this outrageous behavior on the part of these paid public employees doing this. I said, 40 years ago, the police used to wait out in my office to come in and see me if they would arrest someone. Now I've had them attack me here in my home. My mother's care provider was attacked in my shower by the police doing this. So it's this heavy handedness that has been, that they have turned to. Judges Harlow Lennon, who I had the highest regard for, I had him as an instructor, told me he couldn't wait to get out of the system, that he saw the corruption coming in about 40 years ago into the system. And the core problem is, I said, people, listen to me. The core problem is that people are not being able to make a public record of your injury. Unless what has happened to you is a matter of public record, it's legally not a fact. It's a fact, but it's not a legal fact until it's typed up, date stamped, and filed with the clerk of the court. That's what I used to do when the police would arrest you. They would come in and see me, and I would draft an indictment charging you with whatever they said that you had done.
Right.
Title 42 and Title 18, 50 years ago, when King was assassinated in the South, they passed federal civil rights legislation so that you have federal civil rights. If the locals are messing with you, you're supposed to be able to go into federal court.
Right.
But they've corrupted the federal court system, too, where they will just dismiss out of hand anything that you file. That's the reality that's been going on here in the Oregon.
Have a great day.
Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye now. Back to the phone line. Good morning, Richard. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, Richard here. Where can one access a copy of the present collective bargaining agreement with the Police Patrolmen's Union?
Yes, you can get it from the Human Resource Department at the City of Portland if you just went to the front desk. Or actually, you could probably get it online as well. But it's the Human Resource Division of the City of Portland.
Very well. Thank you.
You're welcome. Next caller, please. Good morning, Carolyn. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, this is. I'm a home care worker. When you mention union and their number of hours a week, they are obliged or free to work. I can tell you that our latest contract, we got the state to up our 40-hour week to 50 hours a week. We are now under the 40-hour week and the benefits based on that through federal lawsuits. Now, I don't have the specifics about those lawsuits. I'm sorry. But when I hear that the police department can work more than 40 hours a week, more than 50 hours a week, that I cannot work by law now, by contract, I have something. You know, I react.
Right.
I'm saying, hey, look, if I'm mandated to only work 50 hours a week, then why can't they do the same thing?
I agree. I absolutely agree.
The comment that the home care commission, who we bargain with, along with, of course, the state of Oregon's upper people, state that this is for the benefit of the worker, so the worker doesn't get burned out.
Right. Well, I agree with you, but what I do know is that both at the county, Multnomah County Sheriff's Office and Portland Police Bureau, every year, the Willamette Week creates a list of the highest paid public employees, and every year, police officers and Multnomah County Sheriff's Officers are at the top of that list consistently, right? And it's not because they have to. It's because it's seen as a entitlement that they can work as much overtime as they want. But you have
Well, the thing is that the payors, as in the state of Oregon or whoever is the payor, should have a right to say how many hours of overtime will be paid, because there are, if it's a state thing that is the pay, or if the state is paying, that also means that it takes money from everything else.
Yes.
And I just discovered, to my chagrin, that the feds have fined Oregon, the state, because there are too many vehicles on the road per capita in the metro area. That's Washington, Multnomah, and Clackamas County. And I was sort of shocked to learn that, but that still means there's money coming out of the general fund that need to go to all kinds of things.
Yes.
And that.
Ma'am, I'm sorry. I'm running out of time. I'm going to have to let you go. Thank you very much for your call. I understand your point. brilliantly. Again, August 23rd at Maranatha Church from 6 to 8 p.m. will be the meeting to weigh in on whether the community review, the Citizen Review Commission should disappear or be collaborated with the Police Review Board. That's August 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. at Maranatha Church. Thank you, Steve, for as always making me sound good. I will see you all next week, same time, same place, same station. Have a great day.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
And good morning. It is KBOO, KBOO Portland, a couple minutes before 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour, we've got Fight the Empire with host Per Fogering. Today's guest is writer John Michael Greer, author of the new book Dark Age America, Climate Change, Cultural Collapse, and the Hard Future Ahead. Then at 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia with news, views, and interviews. It's Chris Andre. 10:15, we'll have not flashpoints. Instead, we have a special from KPFA called Cover to Cover with host Jack Foley. And they'll be talking about movies and the opera. At 11 o'clock, it's Between the Covers with host David Naiman. Today's guest is writer Jesse Ball, author of the blistering new novel, How to Set a Fire and Why. But up next, it's Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell is on deck with all the news you're not supposed to know. Stay tuned. That's next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Rock Against the TPP, Saturday, August 20th at Director Park in Portland. Rock Against the TPP is an effort to educate and fight against the Trans-Pacific Partnership, an anti-democratic deal between 12 countries that was negotiated in complete secrecy by government officials and hundreds of corporate lobbyists. Rock Against the TPP features Downtown Boys, Evangeline Lilly, Danbert Nobacon from Chumbawamba, Makana, Son of Nun, and many more. Again, that's Rock Against the TPP, Saturday, August 20th at Director Park, 815 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. The concert is all ages and wheelchair accessible, but RSVP is required. More information about how to RSVP, the other performers, and the TPP can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.